Psalm 49. Hear this, all you peoples. Listen, all who live in this world, both low and high, rich and poor alike. My mouth will speak words of wisdom. The meditation of my heart will give you understanding. I will turn an ear to a proverb. With the harp, I will expound my riddle. Why should I fear when evil days come, when wicked deceivers surround me, those who trust in their wealth and boast of their great riches? No one can redeem the life of another or give to God a ransom for them. The ransom for a life is costly. No payment is ever enough, so that they should live on forever and not see decay. For all can see that the wise die, that the foolish and the senseless also perish, leaving their wealth to others. Their tombs will remain their houses forever, their dwellings for endless generations, though they had named lands after themselves. People, despite their wealth, do not endure. They are like the beasts that perish. This is the fate of those who trust in themselves and of their followers who approve their sayings. They are like sheep and are destined to die. Death will be their shepherd, but the upright will prevail over them in the morning. Their forms will decay in the grave, far from their princely mansions. But God will redeem me from the realm of the dead. He will surely take me to himself. Do not be overawed when others grow rich, when the splendor of their houses increases, for they will take nothing with them when they die. Their splendor will not descend with them, though while they live, they count themselves blessed. And people praise you when you prosper. They will join those who have gone before them, who will never again see the light of life. People who have wealth but lack understanding are like the beasts that perish. It's really strange having that behind me and not there. I'll keep looking that way. Sorry about that. Wealth, but no understanding. And they are like beasts that perish. And really, I want to make sure that we are people who don't have wealth without understanding. But actually, we have understanding in what we have. See, it doesn't matter how much we can accumulate if we don't have understanding and we don't have the right priorities. What's it worth? There's some extremely vivid imagery in that psalm. Despite their wealth, they don't endure. Their forms will decay in the grave, far from their princely mansions. Now, I don't think we need to get this wrong, because this psalm isn't saying people shouldn't be wealthy, but it's asking, what's it worth? And more importantly, where's your trust? What good is wealth without understanding? What value is money? It certainly shouldn't be our priority, because it won't last. This psalm is speaking about people who trust in themselves and in what they have. So it's about the futility of wealth. But specifically the type of wealth that amasses more and more but never gives out. Selfish wealth. See, wealth can be useful, but it needs a greater purpose than accumulation. Otherwise, ultimately, it's worthless. Let me tell you, wealth won't stop you from dying. And it won't bring you any comfort when you do. You know, in Israel, there's a very famous body of water called the Dead Sea. And it's famous for its unique features. It is the saltiest sea in the world. Has anyone ever been to the Dead Sea? There's quite a few of us there. If you go to Israel next year, you'll get a chance to go there. And it's the saltiest sea in the world. Why is it the saltiest sea in the world? Well, it's the only sea in the world that has no outlets. Although, strictly speaking, that's not true. See, I went to Israel, and I found an outlet. I was so pleased when I saw that, I took a picture straight away. The Dead Sea is a wonderful metaphor. Because if all you do is take in and never give out, it doesn't make you big or grand. It makes you so saturated with self, you're dead. Lifeless, like the Dead Sea. Disconnected from everything else. This psalm is about money, wealth, the things we buy, and the place they have in our lives. And really, that's what I want to talk about this morning, because it is not good to be like the Dead Sea. We are also, of course, taking up a vision offering after the message. Now, let's get some stuff out of the way. This was a message I was going to bring September time. It's one I felt I needed to bring, and one I felt that we needed to bring at some point. It just turns out that I'm doing it today at the vision offering. Steve was originally going to do it today, and we swapped. We swapped for tonight, I've realized, and you got the night off. But anyway, so we swapped, and it ended up that I ended up doing this message today. So it fell on the vision offering, which I think is good and appropriate, but it was certainly not by our intention. See, I worked for a long time on Christian fundraising events, and it's given me an aversion to them. It's certainly given me an aversion to financial teaching followed by an opportunity to give, because it gets coloured by the context of the giving. But it fell on today. You know, some churches do a money talk before every offering. We don't do that. We won't ever do that. But that doesn't mean we won't talk about finance. Because it is good and it's right to talk about finance, because it's an important part of all of our lives. And it's something we do need to address. So there's a time and a place for all things. And today is the time for that. I also feel quite comfortable sharing about giving today, because I know everybody's been praying all week about what to give. And God's already spoke to you. And what I'm going to say is not going to change that. But if you haven't, and God hasn't already spoken to you, and God does speak to you, or God changes it, then I encourage you, rise up to that today. So while this teaching is accompanied by an offering, please, it's bigger than that. It's bigger than that. This isn't about today. This is about tomorrow. This is about next week. This is about next year. This is about how we understand our money, how we understand giving, and the place that finance should take in our lives. Is that okay? It's not something we can't pretend doesn't exist. The Bible talks about money. There's a tendency in church to go, uh-oh, it's the money talk. Time to get offended. Time to stop listening. What am I doing tomorrow? That's giving the enemy what he wants. If the devil can take control of your finances, he can bind you up in them, and he can limit the work of God in your life. So for him, it's win-win. Don't give him the satisfaction. We can't avoid talking about money, because Jesus talked about money a lot. Often financial teaching in church skews towards, how can I get more of it? That's not what we're going to do today. In fact, if we were to teach on how to get more money, this psalm kind of flies in the face of that. This psalm is clear. How much you gather, what is it? What does it really mean? See, it's not about how much we get. That's not what defines any of us. What defines us really is how much we give. What we do with it when we have it. Proverbs 11:24 says, one gives freely, yet grows richer. Another withholds what he should give, and only suffers want. Which kind of doesn't make sense, but is the way it works. The question isn't how much money do you earn or how much money do you have, but what do you do with what you have? God blesses different people differently with different incomes, but God expects good stewardship from everyone. See, Jesus talked not just about our money, but the use we have for our money. In Matthew 6, 19 to 24, Jesus said, "Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, where thieves break in and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The eye is the lamp of the body. So if your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light in you is darkness, how great is the darkness?" There's a song that they used to sing, an old hymn called "How Great is the Darkness." I remember coming across it in old hymn books. I never remember singing it. But I also think, what a strange title for a song, "How Great is the Darkness." But that's what it's about. "No one can serve two masters, for either you will hate the one and love the other, or he'll be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money." Notice Jesus doesn't say you should not serve God and money. He says you cannot. It's impossible. Money can either be your servant or it can be your master. The choice is yours. It's very much a question of how you treat it. Let's just take a minute and have a look at what this stuff, money, actually is. I've got some money on me. Oh, I do. That's rare. You notice it's not a big note that I have in my pocket. What is this? Well, it's existed for an extremely long time in one form or another. It's kind of become a necessity. Star Trek envisions a future where money's no longer needed. But Star Trek is fiction. It's a nice idea, but I don't think it's one that's possible. Certainly not until we get to the kingdom of God, where we won't need it. And we've become rather reliant on this stuff. You know, when we think of it, what normally comes to mind? It's either this or it's one of these. Some coins as well. Notes and coins. This is essentially a shape, a rectangle of... It's not paper. It used to be paper. Now, this is environmentally friendly polymer. It's plastic that has security features on it. And the security features on these new ones are amazing. Absolutely amazing. This is cleaner, safer, and stronger than paper, according to the Bank of England. But in itself, I mean, it's just a bit of plastic. The coin, even though it looks like it's gold or silver, it isn't. It's nickel, zinc, and copper. The new 10p's, which is one there, are nickel-plated steel. That's what they're made of. The paper's made by the Bank of England, and the coins are made by the Royal Mint. Which I didn't realise they were made by two different organisations, but it kind of makes sense, now you think about it. And essentially, what we're looking at here is cheap bits of metal and cheap bits of plastic, which is going to go back in my pocket. Actually, not yet, I still need that. There's no intrinsic value in that in itself. It's not worth in itself anything. The value in this is in what it represents. Now, officially, this is meant to represent some gold in the Bank of England. It even says on it, hold on, let's make that zoom out a bit. "I promise to pay the bearer on demand the sum of £10. Which is a weird thing to carry around. I promise to pay the bearer the sum of £10. But even that gold in the Bank of England is only worth something because we've decided it's worth something. Banknotes essentially began life as notes from banks. They started life as a receipt. So you take your coins or your gold and you put them in the bank. And then you got an official note from the bank to say, we owe you that back. You've put your money in, we owe you it back. It was a receipt. You can go to the Bank of England Museum and see some of these old banknotes today. Has anyone ever been to the Bank of England Museum? Oh dear. It's actually quite interesting, but anyway, maybe that's just us. So I took these pictures when we were there. Here's a really early one. This is a really early banknote. And you can just sort of make out what it says. And it's a promise to pay, not the bearer this time, but a specific person. It says, and I think it says John Coleman, but handwriting was funny back then. I think it says John Coleman. And the amount was for £22. So this is a very early banknote saying John Coleman can get £22 when he takes that back to the bank, because he put £22 in the bank. The note was a promise that the bank would give you that value back. You have my gold, this is my receipt. But then they started to add the phrase, pay the bearer of. That allowed you to take that note and give it to somebody, and they could go to the bank and get the money out. So if you owed somebody some money, you could say, well, here's my note. You go to the bank, and they'll give you my money. So they were able to withdraw it, and you could keep it safe. Here's an early one of those from 1703. I promise to pay Mr. Philip Derwent, I think, or the bearer on demand the sum with two M's for some reason of £40. And this became a way of paying people. You had a promissory note, you could pass it on to somebody. People then started, guess what? People then started to fake them. Shocker, isn't it? They then started to get a little bit more fancy, so you couldn't copy them quite as easily. That's why banknotes are full of all of those squiggles and things today. And we're starting to see an official seal in the corner there that's, you know, had to be put on with a certain stamp. And over the years, they've developed and developed into the banknotes we have today. But essentially, they serve exactly the same function as that piece of paper there. It's a promissory note that corresponds to its value in gold. You put them in the bank, and the bank transfers that to your account. Coins were once made from gold and precious metals, and they were a way of carrying your gold around. They then started to contain less gold and less gold and less gold, and now they just represent gold. So money just represents gold, which in itself is only valuable because we've decided gold is valuable. Well, that doesn't really get us very far into what money really is, does it? I think we can more fully understand what it represents if we ask a question. What if we didn't have it? Without money, we would go back to a barter economy. If I want something, I have to trade something else for it, whether it's goods or a favour or service. But there's limits to that. Now, I'd like you to meet somebody. These are my three chickens. Ginger, guess which one Ginger is? Henny and Penny. Now, I know they aren't very good names. We weren't very good chicken keepers to start with, and we went through a few. So we kind of went through all the names we liked best. Penny is the one who looks like a penny, although a penny isn't. It's the wrong colour. But anyway, Henny's the... the other one. Anyway, these are my chickens, and they give me a lot of eggs. We have an abundance of eggs. Now, if I had eggs, which I do, and I wanted some beef, which I often do, I would need to find somebody who has a cow. But not just somebody with a cow. I would need to find somebody with a cow who also intends on making themselves an omelette. Because they have to want my eggs. And as you can see, it gets quite complicated. Because what if I don't have chickens, but I've got a skill? Well, I need to find someone who needs that skill in trade for the thing that I want. So ideally, what you need to simplify this is you want to go to a place where you don't have to spend time going around different people to get things. You want all of this stuff in one place. Much easier. And that's what a shop is. Where you go to get all of these different things. Now, it would be really handy if instead of going to the shop and trying to exchange my eggs for all of these different things, that I had like a middleman, like a thing that you could use that could pass on. And that's what money essentially is. Just a thing that you can pass on to represent that you want that one thing, but I haven't got something you need, but you do need this because you can exchange this for something else. See, money in itself isn't worth anything. It's just an avenue of exchanging itself for goods and services. Money only has value because society has agreed it's worth something. And it can be anything. You know, we put a lot of store in this stuff, zinc, polymer, paper, but, you know, bonds, numbers on a screen. Bitcoin is essentially the same thing. Bitcoin is only worth something because somebody's decided it's worth something. Now, that's a very simple way of breaking it down. By the way, if you don't know what Bitcoin is, don't worry. I don't think anybody really does. But essentially what money is, an agreed way of trading possessions, trading my skill, trading my energy, and trading my time. The more I get from those things, the more my skills would be considered to be worth. Now, this is important because this tells us what money really represents, rather than some gold in a bank somewhere that I'm never going to see. When we go to work, we train. Some of that training happens on the job, some of it happens beforehand. You go there, you spend your time there, probably a good percentage of your day, in some cases, most of your day. And we put our training to use. We put our skills to use. And our employers, in exchange for our skills, our time, our effort, give us money, either in cash or by transfer. In other words, they've decided your skills, your time, your training are worth a certain amount to them. The employer has decided that those parts of your life are worth that. And that's what money really is. A representation of you. It's your time. It's your skills. It's your training. It's your effort. And in some jobs, it's bits of your sanity. Money represents an investment of your substance. It's bits of who you are. See, we say time's money, but actually what's really true is the opposite. Money's time. And skill. And effort. And Jesus said, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. What you've got your money invested in is what you care about. Treasure doesn't follow your heart. You don't put money in the things you care about. Jesus said your heart follows your treasure. The things you spend your money on will be the things you start to care about. Why? Because when you put your money into something, essentially you're putting part of your substance into it. It's part of you that you're giving up to acquire or to invest in it. So when your money is only spent on you, guess what you're only invested in? Yourself. You become your own little idol. Equally true is when your money gets invested into other people. You care more about other people. When you take your money and you invest it in the kingdom of God, you care more about the kingdom of God. See, sometimes we wait until we care before we help. But it's the other way around. When you put something into it, you start to care more. Psalm 49 looks at the folly of self-investment. Because when you make yourself your own idol, you're worshipping a God who's going to die. Going to die. For all can see that the wise die, that the foolish and the senseless also perish. That's everyone, by the way. We're one of those. Leaving their wealth to others. And those others, by the way, are going to die too. Their tombs will remain their houses forever. That's bleak, isn't it? Their dwellings for endless generations, though they'd named lands after themselves. People, despite their wealth, do not endure. They are like the beasts that perish. People don't endure. No matter how rich you are, he might be able to stave off, I mean, you know, rich people, look at the Queen Mother, she lasted a long time because money helps. But you do still die. You will still meet your end. You know, you can live in a massive mansion. You'll still end up in the same size grave as everybody else. What lasts isn't what you've kept, but what you gave and the effect that giving had on other people. See, the trouble with amassing money is it never stops. Ecclesiastes 5, 10, 11. I know 10's only up there. I added 11 this morning and forgot to put it there. Whoever loves money never has enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with their income. And because it's Ecclesiastes, we have to say this too is meaningless. When goods increase, they increase who eat them. And what advantage has their owner but to see them with his eyes? See, focusing on money becomes this perpetual pursuit that is only going to lead to dissatisfaction. You get more, guess what? You still won't have enough. So many people are caught up with this dream that our current society wants us to have for more. You see, the world needs us to keep on spending more. You have to spend more money this year than you did last year, or the economy will crash. A company has to make more money than it did last year, or it's seen as in trouble. Even if they sell exactly the same amount, that's not good enough. Because our culture is obsessed with more, which means they will do whatever they can to make you spend more money. And you can even end up as Christians invested in more. People who only tithe because they want the outpouring. That's so dissatisfying. Let me tell you, if you want more, you'll never have enough. The more you have, the more you'll spend. It's amazing. It's not how much you have that counts, but what you do with what you have. And God requires that we give to his work. Malachi 3:10, very famous verse this. Bring the whole tithe into the storehouse, that there may be food in my house. Test me in this, says the Lord Almighty, and see if I will not throw open the floodgates of heaven and pour out so much blessing that there will be not enough room to store it. I am sure you have heard this verse a great many times, probably mainly during a fundraiser. But there's a problem with this verse. I think we miss the point. Many people teach on it, but give it the wrong focus. See, often we focus on this second part. Oh, does this work? Oh, yeah. Often we focus on, see if I will not throw open the floodgates of heaven and pour out so much blessing. We often focus on that bit. And we get caught up in it. God said, test me on this. See if I'll throw open the floodgates. Well, that sounds pretty good. And we get excited about that, and it does sound very exciting. And can I say also, it's true. Ever since I started tithing, I've never run out of money. There's been times where it's felt like I've run out of money. There's been times where I've been thinking, oh God, oh God, oh God, please help. But I've never run out, and there's times I should have run out that I didn't run out. And God's blessed. I've been short. I've had little. I've been skint. I've panicked. But I've been okay. God does bless. It happens. But that's not the point. See, God doesn't say bring the whole tithe in that I might open the floodgates. The blessing bit is separate. In fact, there's a full stop. That's a separate sentence. No, he says something else. He says, bring the whole tithe in that there may be food in my house. That's the reason for tithing, that there may be food in God's house. Interesting. Now, here's some quick questions for you. Does God eat food? That's not a hard question. No, he doesn't. Does God get hungry? No. So when he says that there may be food in my house, he doesn't mean so that the heavenly fridge will be full. Clearly. So what does he mean by his house? Well, he means his temple. At this point, he meant his temple, his church, his work on earth. He wants there to be food, provision, in the house of God. He wants there to be provision for his work. See, everything that went on at the temple, everything that goes on at a local church, it's really annoying, but it costs money. Wish it didn't. Rebuilding this place is going to cost... I wish it didn't. Be great if it didn't, but it will. There was such a thing back in those times known as the temple tax. Even Jesus paid the temple tax. Every male over 20 was to pay the temple tax. And Jesus paid it. This wasn't one of those things that Jesus got angry about. This wasn't like the money changers in the temple. This was an agreed upon sum for the maintenance and works that took place in the temple. It was the ripping off of people that Jesus got angry about. The money changers who were like, okay, you're coming in the temple. You want to spend your money. That's great. But you can't spend that money. You have to change it to temple money. It's like Disney dollars. You can't spend that. You've got to spend our money. I can change it for you for a fee. And they were ripping people off. That's what Jesus was getting angry about. Not the fact that they were talking about money in the temple, because money was a part of the temple system. It was the ripping off of people that Jesus was objecting to. And there's ministries that still do that today, and that's wrong. But talking about money and even asking for money in itself is not what Jesus was getting mad about. Jesus paid the temple tax, even though he actually said he was exempt. Because he said, well, I'm the Son of God. You know, who pays? Servants or sons? Sons don't have to pay. But I tell you what, I will pay anyway as an example. In other words, I'm paying, you pay. It's always been a part of God's plan and God's system for God's people to pay for God's work. Always. Why? Because when you put your money into something, you're putting part of yourself in it. You care about it. You're invested in it. You want to see it succeed. I tell you what, I started caring about New Life Church a lot more when I started putting in. And I made all the excuses for years. You're literally more invested. God wants his house to have provision and to have resource. Now, he could just open the heavens and bless a work. Of course he could. But here in Malachi, he tells us he wants it to come from his people. See, there's an attitude, and it's growing. I came across this a lot when, you know, back in the day, that says, well, if, and the if's always in capital letters because this is a point being made. If God is in this, then the money will just come in. Sometimes it's used as a way of suggesting you shouldn't be asking for money. If God was in this, it would just come in. And sometimes it's used to suggest that if the money doesn't come in, God wasn't in that, was he? Ha, sucker. Both of those attitudes are wrong. Both of them. Yes, God can make money just appear to make his resources work. But he doesn't want to do that. He wants his people to resource his work. And that means if his people don't step up, it doesn't mean God's not in it. It means his people are not being obedient. And there's plenty of times the will of God is hindered by his people not being obedient to him. If God was in this, say the building work, would somebody just step up and pay for it? Absolutely. Do you know who? Me and you. That's God's design. I honestly believe if God's people gave as they should, there would never, ever be any shortage in church. I mean, don't get me wrong, we'd spend it all, but there'd never be any shortage in church. I don't believe the church should ever be seeking grants from the world. Now, there's the church and the other, like there's this we do over the road, which is daycare is different because that's a business. But I mean the church should never really be. I honestly don't believe the church should ever have to rely on grants. Sometimes you have to, but it's not God's design. He wants God's people to pay for God's work. And you might disagree with that, but that's just my personal opinion. You know the costs for building the temple? You know where it came from? A free will offering. Same with the tabernacle. It came from God's people. David and Solomon had a vision for the temple, but David realized it would first of all cost him, it would cost Solomon, but it would also cost the people. See, vision's great. And I could have just done vision today. But vision needs provision to become reality. And we've talked about the vision plenty. Without vision, the people perish. But without the people, the vision will perish. It's very exciting to share vision. It's very exciting to look at the plans. By the way, do you see the plans on the way? And if you didn't, they're all on the wall. You can have a look at them on the way out. Very exciting to go and look at them. And you can go, oh, that looks amazing. I can't wait to be in there. You know, I can't wait to see it done. I'm behind this. I want to see this happen. But until you do something about that, practically, to put something of your substance and yourself into it, it's just words. And actually, it doesn't mean anything. Jesus told a parable about words without action. Matthew 21, verses 28 to 31. What do you think? A man had two sons. And to the first he said, son, go and work in the vineyard today. And he answered, I will not. But afterwards he changed his mind and went. And he went to the other son and said the same. And he answered, I will go, sir. I go. That looks like a... Anyway, I will go. It sounds better. Anyway. But did not go. Which of the two did the will of his father? And they said, well, the first. See, it's not your words that say you're obedient to God, but your actions. God is far more interested in your actions than your words. Incidentally, that's not just financial. That's to do with everything in the kingdom of God and everything we do in church and for each other. If you're telling somebody you're going to help them, it has to be more than words or it doesn't mean anything. It's just words. Or if you tell the church you're going to start something up, until there's action, it doesn't exist. You know, well, this life is so fleeting. Psalm 49 says, but while they still live, they count themselves blessed. And people praise you when they prosper. They will join those who've gone before them, who will never again see the light of life. See, prospering's good, but it doesn't last. So much financial teaching in church is based on the idea of giving to get. And yes, God did say he'd open the windows of blessing, but it is still entirely the wrong focus. People praise God when they prosper. That's good, that's right. But we're blessed to be a blessing. And I understand why so much financial teaching gets that focus. I do. Do you know why? People respond to it. You start preaching, give and you'll get. People respond. But we shouldn't be giving for blessing. I know this is getting recorded and I wasn't going to share this, but I will anyway. When we were working with God TV and we were doing those fundraisers, there was a time we were all sick of it. Absolutely sick of it. You know, these guys who come on who are the hustlers. Sick of it. We got on a good guy, who instead of doing the giving to get, did a great message on why we should give to something we support. Great message. Absolutely no response. Because people don't respond to that. And that's tragic. It's tragic. So he wasn't back on again. In Malachi, he tells Israel they've robbed him. How? In tithes and offerings. In other words, they weren't doing what he's asked them to do. Now, I don't know if anybody's doing this, but there's a tendency here to go, boo. Old Testament, boo. We're set free from that. But did Jesus ever say stop? See, if there was something wrong with the way people were interpreting the Old Testament, Jesus corrected it. He never said stop. There are many reasons people don't tithe. Incidentally, if you want to go totally New Testament, none of it's yours. There are many reasons people don't tithe. Most of them are involved with waiting for something to change in your circumstances first, or something in the church. But really, and I've been there, so I know, that's just stalling. If you're waiting for something to be right within the church that you currently disagree with, can I tell you something? Never going to happen. Never going to happen. Even if that thing gets fixed, you'll find something else. If you're waiting to feel like you're fully invested in what the church is doing, never going to happen until you invest. If you're waiting until you're earning enough money, guess what? Never going to happen. The thing about 10%, right, is it goes up with your income. It always remains the same percentage. But if you start to give, and you start to give of your substance, I'll tell you what, you'll find you'll care so much more. Why? You're more invested. Your heart follows where you put your treasure, not the other way around. When God gets your money, he gets your heart. He gets you. See, that's what money represents, your time, your affection, your energy. And when you give, you're giving him those things. When you do that, you find you actually want to give your time. You want to give your energy. You want to give more of you up to the church. See, the focus on finance should never be about how we get more of it, because that's a dangerous path to go down. Hebrews 13:5 says, keep your lives free from the love of money and be content with what you have. Because God has said, I will never leave you. Never will I forsake you. Not that having more is wrong, but the focus really is, what good can this finance do? If more is your pursuit, more will never be enough, because your budget will expand every time from the overflow of what you have. He's blessed us to bless. You know, everything we have is his anyway. Everything. All he's asked us to do is steward it well. Now, we need to take a moment while we're talking about stewarding and talk about a very good, important part of good stewardship, and that is gifted. Now, for some bizarre reason that I cannot get my head around, gifted exists. I mean, the government gives money to churches. It's amazing that gift aid exists. And if you pay tax and you give to a church, the government, I still can't work this out, adds 25% of what you've given on top. At no cost to you. The government never does anything at no cost to you. It is quite literally free money. And one day somebody's going to wake up and go, hang on, what are we doing? But for now, it exists. It's a miracle. You know, just in case you're bad at maths, because I am, 25% is a quarter. I had to look that up. But it only works if you agree to do it. It doesn't just happen. If you're given regularly to New Life and you're not gifted, do you know what's happening? There's 25% lost every time you give. Every time. Gone. Even if you've signed up for gifted and you want to be especially humble one week and you put it in anonymously, I'm going to be humble. That money can't be gifted because we don't know where it came from. Which is a shame, because say you put £300 in an envelope, and I'm just going to put that in quietly. If you don't know, that could have been £375. Look, let me be bold with you. Can I be bold? If you are a tither, which you should be, and if you're paying tax, which most of us are, you should be signed up for gifted. There's no credible reason that I can think of not to. Because anything else to me is just bad stewardship. And I really can't see the argument elsewhere. Now, I know why. I just don't know. I can't work it out. Now, maybe you're concerned somebody might see what you give. Shocker. Did you know I don't see? I don't look. I could. I just don't look. I don't look. Only two people see. And they don't really care. They're not checking up. They're just putting it in a spreadsheet. It's only Paul and Michelle. When I say only Paul and Michelle, I do love you guys, of course. It's really not a big deal. Deuteronomy 12:23 says, "And behold, the Lord your God, in the place where you chose to make his name to dwell there, you shall eat of the tithe of your grain, of your wine, and of your oil, and the firstborn of your herd and flock, that you may learn to fear the Lord your God always." Why do we tithe? To keep God in the right place. And that's above us. When you tithe, you're saying to your finances, you are submitted to Christ too. You're putting them where they belong, not as an idol, but as a resource. Yes, God blesses your finances as a result, which is great, but it's totally not the point. Do you control your money? Or does your money control you? Because it's one or the other. What you do with it tells the story better than what you say. People who have wealth but lack understanding are like beasts that perish. May that not be true of us. May we have understanding enough to keep wealth in its correct place. May we be generous, not because we're seeking favor from God, but because we already have favor from God. Now, the temptation is to tie all this in with a vision offering that we're going to take today. But this is bigger than that. This is a principle for our lives that we need to understand. It's not a question of how much you have, but how you use what you've been given. This psalm is not written to those who just have a lot of money. It even starts with, "Listen, all you peoples, low and high, rich and poor." The question is, what is your priority? Where is your trust? Is your trust in yourself or is your trust in him? How do you define wealth? By what you have or by what you give? May we be known by what we give and not what we have.